Evening, everyone. Welcome to the Smashy Business Show. I'm your host for the day, Farah Makhlouf.
And this is Richard Fitzgerald joining Farah today. Good morning, everyone.
Morning. Happy Thursday. Today, we're going to be talking about Saudi Arabia launching a summer 2024 tourism plan with visa support, free flights, and tax-free shopping. Then we're going to move on to Donald Trump Jr. He's working on projects in Oman and Dubai. Then following that, we're going to be talking about Dubai's shared shard platform. It lets investors co-own luxury properties from $54,000.
Impressive. Farah, are you a speculator? Or are you like a conservative, risk-averse person?
I'm not the biggest fan of risk, basically. I think I follow my father's footsteps in that aspect. He's a risk management type guy in banking. So that's where we stand.
He literally does it for a living.
Yeah. Assesses risk.
Compliance and all that stuff. But yeah, I ask because, you know, in investments, like we have a lot of speculators in investment, whether it's in property or different asset classes and many different things. I read this thread last night. There's an excellent podcast called The Founders Podcast by a guy called David Senra. And he read a couple of books. I read a book on John Paul Getty. So that kind of industrialist American oil conglomerate thing that became Getty Images and many other things. Anyway, he wrote 19 essays for Playboy magazine in 1960s, imagine. His goal was to transfer what he learned, so he wrote essays over a 50-year career. His main advice, I won't read them all because it's a good thread, we can link it in the show notes, but his main advice is, you're too focused on speculating and trading. The best entrepreneurs don't want to trade, they want to own. They know all the real money is in the long term. Most people are too impatient and incompetent to understand that. He goes on. An example he uses in the book, a young man buys an oil lease on Monday for $4,000. He sells it to Getty on Tuesday for $8,000. The young man is bragging about doubling his money in 24 hours. Getty makes $800,000 on that lease over the next decade.
That's impressive.
That's a reference, isn't it? And the reason I brought it up, because the story we're not talking about at the moment, but Rivian, the electric vehicle maker that PIF invested in, and there's a big plant being built. That's Lucid, but Rivian's the other one. I got mixed up. But Rivian, actually PIF didn't invest in Rivian. Rivian were in trouble. They're the famous CEO with the fake rolling truck video. Mm. He basically made a video saying this truck can self-drive down a hill, and it wasn't possible. Mm-mm. Technology wasn't there. So he's out, but they were in trouble, and Volkswagen threw them a lifeline, gave them $5 billion, shared tech, JV, future, automotive, all that stuff. Anyway, they popped 30% yesterday. And a failing media company that I always have my eye on in the US, and you know, full disclosure, I have some shares in them, but they BuzzFeed, they're down a lot over the years.
Yeah.
And they popped about 20% yesterday, unknown why. There's some activist investor there. Anyway, they jumped up. So, you know, so just referencing those two anecdotes and thinking, are you, anyone who's a shareholder of BuzzFeed and Rivian, are they 20 or 30% better? Or are they, is it false hope? Are these companies actually badly run companies? And going back to this analogy by John Paul Getty, are you better off owning and thinking long for it and not speculating on some assets like the shareholder like I am on BuzzFeed?
Well, I mean, it's definitely a risk, but I mean, is it one worth taking? Probably.
Yeah, I just resonated with me on the ownership thing. I think you know, Warren Buffett talks about it a lot. I think that long-term thinking and building mindset is a more strategic and, you know, it's a better way for growth. And a lot of young people see influencers and travel, and they see crypto bros, and they see this sort of speculation, get rich quick scheme things. They're called get rich quick scheme things for a reason, you know. And it is sort of, there's a lot of kind of things we could talk about, you know, working and or earning and stuff like that. But especially on seeing things pop, like you can get FOMO. You know, we talked yesterday with Waleed about NVIDIA. You know, you could see that chart of 2,000% growth or something the last few years, but then it dropped $600 billion in the last week. So, you know, it's kind of like, oh, it's $3 trillion. Do you get FOMO? Oh, I should have put a grand into that, etc. And then actually, hang on, you know. So, yeah. General point that an insight I have today is, don't speculate, own, think long term, be strategic, don't get distracted, don't get FOMO. Be like Farah's dad.
And those are tips from Richard Fitzgerald himself. I feel like we should all be following that, to be honest. Okay, let's jump into the top story of the day. Saudi Arabia launched a summer 2024 tourism plan with visa support, free flights, and tax-free shopping. So if you guys don't know, it's a summer initiative, and it's launched by Saudi Arabia. They offer easy visas.
Hang on, are they actually giving free flights?
I'm not sure. They say family airline tickets, but like I'm pretty sure this is very conditional.
That's competitive, isn't it? I don't think a tourism board in the world has kind of given you free flights.
Not
smart
at all.
Though, but
not
yeah.
At all. Like you wouldn't even see that in the UAE, which is like very much leading in the tourism industry, but like Saudi Arabia is going very, very hard with this.
Aggressive, some might say. Yeah, covering 7 destinations, 550 tourism products, 150 special offers. Like it does remind me of Dubai Summer Surprises, DSS.
Same. Yeah, that's the first thing that came to mind for me as well.
Yeah, but there's a free family airline ticket.
Mm-hmm. And it covers 7 destinations, like Richard said, Sir, Al-Baha, Taif, Red Sea, Jeddah, Riyadh, Al-Ala, all the major spots, I think. Additionally, the kingdom plans to add 25,000 hotel rooms this year. So I feel like they're really going in hard on this.
One of the guys in our Riyadh office, he spent the Eid break in Taif, and he said it was 25, 30 degrees. Not bad at all, you know.
That is.
There's definitely parts of the Red Sea that are hot. Right. I know that, but you know, and Al-Ula will obviously be a bit hot. It's more inland, but like Saudi's a big place, and there are places where you can kind of have your summer break. So,
yeah, agreed. You've been in and out of Saudi a lot the past few years, especially. So, do you think Saudi is the new tourism spot for Americans, Europeans, just like how Dubai is a little bit?
No and no. All the talk in the Western media at the moment is how all Americans are taking over Europe. I think Europe is the current destination of choice for Americans. And then the second thing, no, Saudi isn't the new Dubai in terms of a choice. I think, I don't know if you interact with other people who don't know the region at all, but Saudi itself as a brand has something nowhere else in the world has. That sort of mystique about it for all the different reasons, all the different factors. And then this sort of, you know, when they went out with the original campaigns, it was Welcome to Arabia. It was quite strategic that they were owning that Arabian hospitality, that look and feel, that desert vibe and all that sort of stuff. And when you do go to some of the hotels there, and I've been quite fortunate to be on some trips, like press trips, personal trips, this different things. So I've experienced some of that new luxury offering at different levels, and it is compelling. Some things are similar to some offerings here, but definitely what Al-Ula has isn't comparable with here, and vice versa. I think you know, I won't compare apples with apples. You
right,
kind of put
yeah.
me on the spot with that question, but but I don't think I do think the position of Saudi for tourism is a bit different, but some are very the same. Like you know, that sort of Arabian hospitality is in the Gulf as well, or in the UAE. Some of the brands are similar. In fact, a lot of the brand chains run by similar hospitality companies.
Exactly.
But I would point to Red Sea Global Project. I don't think people really have their eye on it enough. And the 2 or 3 current offerings that are out there now, the price points are super high, 7,000-8,000 dirhams per room per night in St. Regis Red Sea. And there's a few other new names that we haven't really heard about yet. But Red Sea Global will compete with Maldives, no doubt. No doubt. I think... yeah, it absolutely will. The Red Sea is absolutely beautiful. I've swam in it from Egypt side, a few
yeah.
triathlon races and stuff like that, and people who dive in Egypt, all that coast. It really is a beautiful ocean.
It's spectacular.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, there's many things there. It's just great to see. And I think let's not get competitive. Let's be positive that these things
yeah.
are happening. You know, we always sort of reference the region, and I do think that it's great that Saudi's economy is coming up, you know, and we can just look at it in a positive light, because unfortunately, you know, macroeconomic and other factors, some of the big countries in the region like Egypt, Turkey, Pakistan, they're suffering at the moment with
yeah.
currency and all these sort of stuff. So, you know, obviously you want everyone to, want all the region to do well, but that Saudi is sort of upping its game in tourism is great.
Definitely. I feel like it's really up there and it's making headlines in terms of tourism. That's why I asked that question, because people are starting to compare Saudi to Dubai or like the UAE in general with how competitive or like how strong it's becoming, especially in the aspect of tourism.
Yeah, I would just think that we should be competing with other continents, not within
not,
it.
Yeah,
use the region as standards and benchmarks, but and obviously everyone. If you're head of tourism, if your job, if your day job, if you have KPIs, then you've got a job, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then even a country has a job and has KPIs or whatever, you know, so they've got targets. But just if we sit back and if we look at prosperity and if we look at the wider region growth and jobs and cross-border trade, because that's what viable economies are, you know? Like, if you look at Europe, that free trade thing, currency or not, the cross-border free trade without tariffs did rise all tides. Mm-hmm. Like, it brought up Eastern Europe, cost of living, but I mean quality of life, and, you know, there's a better term for that, but the QOL terminology that Saudi looks for its own population, is something that hopefully other economies in the region and other leaders of other countries in the region can kind of go, hey, maybe we can be inspired by this and do similar.
Yeah, I agree. It's a very inspirational story, and it's something to, you know, keep on looking for and like watching out for. Saudi's like really on the map right now.
I went to one of the boxing fights the other day, and or the other week. I was thinking of something else. I'll mention it, but I went to the second Fury fight, the real one. The Usyk one, and it was just full of English lads, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
You know, mainly lads. But any other event that I went there recently was lots of Saudis, you know, the Formula mm-hmm. One, the Formula E, lots of Saudis, but the boxing was full of English. So people are now, the ones who used to get a ticket and go to the Champions League in Barcelona are now hopping to Riyadh, and it's going to get a lot more like that. It's just mm-hmm. an extension, and that's quite cool. That's breaking that different type of tourism. But the other thing I was going to mention was, I watched this Egyptian movie in the cinema. What's it called?
Is it Something Is Right?
Yeah, it's like the third installment. It's a famous Egyptian director, and it's got all the cast, like all the actors. Anyway, Farah, the whole thing is an ad for Riyadh. The whole thing.
I'm watching it this weekend, so I'm gonna like look out for that. I hadn't realized that it would have been.
No, it's fully
an ad.
But it's a brilliant movie, and it's like even how they talk about, like, they say things like Saudi's got its perks, like, and then they shoot it. I won't give away the plot line, but they use one of the recent boxing fights as the movie, like they're at the fight, and Tyson Fury's in the movie, and he's wearing a gold watch, and the gold watch is key part of the movie. Mm. But like it's just amazing. Like, and Turki Al-Sheikh is basically, you know, linked production in Egypt to Saudi and storytelling. And even now, like if you go on Smashy Sports today, you'll see stories about what they're doing with a boxing fight in London that's got Riyadh season all over the branding. The next Anthony Joshua fight in September, it was just announced. It's brought to you by Visit Saudi and Saudi Tourism. So they're sort of leveraging all the assets, you know, in different ways. Quite interesting.
Watch the movie, guys.
What's it called? Let's get the name of it. Okay, we'll get it before we finish.
I'm pretty sure it's Wulad Aiz or Aulad Aiz or something like that.
Yeah.
I'm not 100% sure. Don't quote me on that, but.
But it's got subtitles. I watched it in Real Cinemas Dubai Mall. You can see it in Roxy. You can see it in Vox and all different places. It's number one in it's the main movie at the moment. Like, it brought in like 100 million something.
Egyptian cinema, guys, it's always like top notch. At least in my opinion as an Egyptian.
Okay. All right.
Moving on to the next story. So Donald Trump Jr. is working on projects in Oman and Dubai. He recently caught a flight with Emirates. It was a quick day trip. He said it only took him like 18 hours to go to both locations. And he's basically there to check on the progress of projects he has in both cities, in both countries. So if you're not very familiar with Don Jr., he oversees the Trump Organization's extensive property portfolio and has been since 2001. He's involved in all aspects of the company's development, from deal evaluation, analysis and pre-development planning, construction, branding, marketing, what have you, sales, like everything under the sun for the Trump Organization.
Yeah, basically like DAR Global, I'm not sure how linked it is with Dar Al-Akhan in Saudi, but Dar Global are a luxury national real estate developer, and they launched the Trump International Resort. We've got one of them in Dubai, golf club and residence, and it's studying AIDA, A-I-D-A project in Oman. So that's why Donald Trump Jr., and we'll put the video up. He sent a really funny video about his, he's like, I'm used to being spoiled all my life, but if you have to travel first class Emirates is pretty good. It's a pretty kind of funny video, isn't it?
Oh yeah. I mean, it's certainly like, it flaunts a little bit, but like, honestly, if you're going to travel and if you have the means, traveling first class on Emirates is the way to go, to be honest. And that's also what he said.
Yeah, December 2028. So we're a good 4 years out, 140 keys. It's a $500 million, as I mentioned. It's got members only club. Will we have our Mar-a-Lago for the Middle East in Oman? And will he be president? His dad, obviously, the cliff hanging nightclub. There's lots of things going on here. It sounds pretty cool. Like Oman, yeah.
Do we think, like, the like whatever he's going, he's doing in Oman right now is going to be as lavish as the one he has in Dubai?
I'm not sure with all the, I'm not sure.
It's different.
Yeah, it's different, isn't it? Yeah, I'm not sure exactly. I think Oman definitely has different attributes to different tastes. Yeah.
He seems to be recognizing that Oman has potential. I mean, it's not one that we hear about all the time. We hear about like investments in Dubai, Abu Dhabi, of course Saudi Arabia right now. So it seems like he's recognizing the value in Oman.
Yeah, there's a 5 million square foot AIDA project, 10 minutes from downtown Muscat. Downtown Muscat's beautiful. Phase one completion 2027. So this is a huge development that obviously the Omani government and tourism entities are involved in. And the fact to get one international partnership like this is a good, is a good thing to see.
I feel like it'll put Oman on the map a little bit as well. Like seeing such a, you know, prominent foreign investment or something like that. I feel like that's pretty good.
Yeah, it's good. Like, and it's foreign, it's FDI as well. It's cash coming out of there, out of the West and into the region. It's good. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, let's not talk politics.
Yeah. We'll
good
leave
luck
that
to
there.
Good luck to what's happening over there in some election thing. But yeah, good Donald Trump Jr., come back more often, get your hands dirty, build a project. And stay longer next time.
Best of luck as well. All right.
Best of luck.
So we're going to move on to the next story, which is Dubai's Shard platform lets investors co-own luxury properties from $54,000. So if you don't know, it's a new property investment platform launched in Dubai. It enables eight investors to co-own a single property, which contributes starting contributions start at around 200,000 dirhams. Mm. Each investor's name is on the title deed as well, and they can stay on the property for at least 44 days annually. So I feel like that's also a key element. I feel like this allows people to invest, but it's smaller.
Yeah, it's so someone in the comments mentioned stake, which is like we were talking about earlier about speculating. It's, you know, if you want to own asset class of property, but don't want to buy assets, so it's like an ETF. You can buy into a bit of, you can buy into a bit of investment in property, but that's, you don't own anything, your name's not in the title deed. Mm. So someone said it's like stake, but it's actually different. This
is different, slightly.
Slightly, yeah. The terminology that I would have known is called timeshare.
That's what I would have assumed. I was going to ask, is this similar to a timeshare?
It sounds very similar. For I think you part own it. So if you get together with eight of your friends, you go, you want a luxury place. And it's, I think, for foreigners, but also residents as well. And you can stay in it. It's on the title deed. So you kind of own it, basically. Mm-hmm. And then if you guys want to rent it out, then you can, your yield could be higher potentially as well.
And I'm pretty sure like the platform itself, Shard, will help you with all of the aspects of it. So like it covers the costs and, you know, I don't know. I feel like it covers like the main basics of like owning a property in Dubai without you getting like, you know, your hands dirty too much. If you don't know what you're doing, basically, I feel like this is a good step to go. Like, it's a way to get a piece of the real estate pie in Dubai without like getting into too much hassle or you have to put too much money down. I feel like this is a way to do it.
Yeah, the comments are interesting. Some people are saying it's like stake, but like you and I, Farah, we both kind of said it's more of a timeshare. Someone said it's a pseudo timeshare, last company to do that, run away with all the money. We don't know if that's true or not.
Yikes.
That never happens. Then there was one called Flow Life, active lifestyle made possible. a Swedish one does the same thing, and that was backed by Andreessen Horowitz. So there's precedent for this type of model elsewhere, mm-hmm. and now Dubai's getting it. So let's see. Wish them luck.
It's definitely something that looks really interesting, especially if you want to, you know, have investments in Dubai. This is a good way to like start, probably, because it's not too expensive, but like it's also a way to have something here in your name.
Yeah, I think definitely exactly. I think it, you know the way that some people, especially elderly people, like to have 6 months in Dubai and 6 months elsewhere.
Yeah.
You know, now's the months that they're not here. So mm-hmm. now's the months that it might be in other parts of the world. But mm-hmm. It sounds like a good one for them, you know. Obviously they can stay in hotels and they can rent. But instead of owning a place all year round, they can have a luxury timeshare. Yeah, not bad.
And it's also luxury properties. If we didn't mention that before, I feel like that's pretty good.
That's pretty good. All right. Thanks a lot. We'll be back tomorrow with another episode. Watch us on Smashy TV. Download the app and follow Smashy Business. We have a really cool newsletter now. Really happy with the structure
of
that.
The way it turned out, It looks really good.
Yeah, Love in Dubai will be following that style soon. But yeah, check out that. It's in your inbox every morning at 7 a.m., 7:30, the day's news, the roundups. But yeah, you can watch this show, share it, and follow Smashy Business. Send us stories. Send us business@smashy.tv. Send us any press releases, any stories, any entrepreneur stuff, inspiring stuff. And cool.
Yeah, that's all from us today in terms of news. But follow us on Smashy Business on Instagram to get the latest and greatest.
All right.
All right.
Bye guys.